A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Hurlman, sponsored by Starburst. This is Adrian Estala, VP of Data Mesh Consulting Services at Starburst and host of Data Mesh TV. Starburst is the leading sponsor for Trino, the open source project, and Jamak's Data Mesh book, delivering data-driven value at scale. To claim your free book, head over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio, a part of the Data as a Product podcast network, is a free community resource provided by DataStax. Data Mesh Radio is produced and hosted by Scott Hurlman, the co-founder of the Data Mesh Learning Community. This podcast is designed to help you get up to speed on a number of data mesh-related topics. Hopefully, you find it useful. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in today's episode? I interviewed Jay Como, who's the head of finance data, and Liz Calloway, who's the director of finance data products at Silicon Valley Bank. To be clear, they were only representing their own views and experiences. So let's talk about my takeaways and thoughts from the conversation. Number one, the governance team should, quote unquote, wear them down with empathy. Take the time to share your context, learn their context, make them feel seen and heard. That will get them to see you as a partner, and good governance is truly about partnering, not mandating or being a gate slash hurdle to get past. I really like this, wear them down with empathy. Just keep working with them, keep saying, I'm here to help. Number two, great governance is the pathway to great data. Great data leads to great decisions, which lead to great outcomes. Share that path to great outcomes so people can see a clear answer to, why are we even doing this? That's a very common question around governance. Governance isn't just risk mitigation. It can be a significant, if almost hidden slash secret, value driver for companies. Number three, to drive governance buy-in from data producers, again, lead with empathy. Let them in on the why. Why does this matter? What is the business value? How can this benefit them? How can this benefit the organization? Number four, quote unquote, help me help you. Jay quoted Jerry Maguire with that one. So help me help you is a good approach to talking to internal teams about data governance. You are there to drive value for them. Take work off their plates when appropriate. You know, talk to them about where they can, you know, what's your pain points? Where are you stuck? Let me be that person that helps you get unstuck. Number five, you can further drive buy-in through helping teams get to quick wins. While the long-term is obviously important, incremental value add is better than a big bang approach. And so you can get a reputation for doing the right things and adding value. Number six, provide a constant stream of value, including executing on where you are helping. You know, that execution really matters, not just saying we will help you. Be good at helping. That will drive teams to want to work with that central governance function. Drive value and the buy-in naturally comes with it. Number seven, good data governance is necessary to avoid fees, fines, and the, you know, huge revenue business impact bad data can have. But don't use those as a boogeyman. Don't use fear to sell good data governance. Talk about, you know, people know that that is something that can happen. So how are you working with them to prevent it and to add value instead of, you know, saying, if you don't do this, the regulators are going to come for you. Number eight, it's easy for a centralized governance team to become a bottleneck. Focus on not solving all the problems for teams, but being there to help when they need it. You are the backstop, not the stop sign. Be the support, not the roadblock. Number 9, to prevent governance in general from being a bottleneck, you must have flexibility and pragmatism. If exceptions to requirements are necessary, then those exceptions are often a valid response, you know, to these other constraints and pressures. But be very explicit about the reason and type of exceptions, and also very explicit about the expectations for if/when those exceptions will be remediated. Number 10, good governance is about incremental improvements, not trying to do everything as a big bang. Set expectations, move forward, fix for today, and prevent the same issue in the future. With that bottom line up front done, let's jump into the interview. Okay, very, very excited for today's episode. I've got Jay Como here, who is the head of finance data at Silicon Valley Bank. And I've got Liz Calloway, who is the director of finance data products at Silicon Valley Bank. What we're going to be talking about today is a lot around governance and, you know, especially within the financial sector. Obviously, governance is quite a complicated and interesting and very needed kind of practice. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things to talk about from people that are on this journey, that are heading forward and kind of being those people that are figuring out what actual federated computational governance actually means. Because I know we're all a little bit kind of confused by everything that means. So Liz, if you don't mind, if you could give a little bit of background on yourself, and then Jay, if you could give some background after that, and then we'll jump into the conversation at hand.
Sounds great. Thanks, Scott. So Liz Calloway, aside from liking to quote movies and talking about data, I've been in the financial services sector for 20 plus years doing anything and everything data related. I got recently labeled a career data person, which was not something I'd ever heard before, but starting to wear that as a badge of honor. Really love the order and cleanliness of data governance and how it helps grow companies and businesses. So super excited to be talking about that today.
Great. And I'm Jay Como. I am the head of data at Finance Data, I should say, at Silicon Valley Bank. I've been in the industry for many, many years, and my forte has been digital and data transformation. I've run large scale operations and technology shops as well, and aspiring to be a career data person. Been in data probably for about 8 years. Although if you run anything successful in a highly regulated industry, you're kind of close to the data, whether you know it or not. So, and I'm also a proud father of 5. I live in Potomac, Maryland with my lovely wife and our 2 dogs, which I've exited from this office. So Scott, you don't have to edit them out. They're snoring or things of that ilk. So glad we're finally here to talk to you, Scott. Really excited about what you're doing with the podcast. So thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for being on. And you may also hear my dog, Gabby, in the background. She does not allow herself to not be in the room when there's recording going on. I have to get her in at the very beginning of every recording. But so kind of topic at hand is around governance. Like, there's so many different places that we could go into from this governance perspective. But when we were talking in the pre-call, we were discussing that, like, moving forward with governance and being comfortable enough to move forward is something where a lot of people are stuck. They are saying, okay, I have to get everything with governance correct. And, you know, yes, you have to make sure you don't go afoul of regulations, but can you talk about how you've worked with the team to understand what their needs are and get people kind of comfortable and get the overall bank as well as the team comfortable with that moving forward? Like, what's been that journey or what have you found that's been helpful in that, and maybe some steps or missteps that other people can avoid, some anti-patterns that you might have run afoul of as well?
In the grand scheme of data, governance is probably the least sexy. And, you know, we're not talking about data science or analytics, where the real fun stuff happens, where you're driving change for the firm, particularly from a bottom line perspective. But I would argue that this topic is so multidimensional and so very important to those other funner topics. The way that I like to discuss it when I'm, and I love, Scott, by the way, that governance as a service, that sounds so much friendlier than governance as a mandate. You have to do it. So I'm not sure how often I've described it as governance as a service, probably not at all. And so I'll probably quote you going forward on that one. But the dimensions of it really comes down to when you're dealing with those individuals that are creating revenue and value for the firm because of data, they're using data analytics, data science, they're really smart and they're making really good decisions and they're driving revenue. But what they might not know is they're not making the absolute best decisions that they could make because they're not working in many cases with the absolute best data. And so it's sort of that Jim Collins, the enemy of great is good. And they're making good decisions is probably how I would describe it. And I think the key to getting the buy-in for governance as a service, for better data governance, is being very thoughtful about having the conversations about if you're using artificial intelligence on data and machine learning, your learning and your intelligence isn't great because your data isn't great. And data gets great by having great governance. And getting great governance takes a great ambassador to sit down and very eloquently, very empathetically have the conversations about what that means. Because most of us, I harken back to my days at a prior firm where I was the global head of reference data. It was my first real job into data. I was the global head of reference data pre-MiFID. For those of you that aren't bankers, that was a pretty significant MiFID too, I should say, a regulation where we needed to know the data on our legal entities for derivatives trades in Europe. And none of us really understood it. So there's this huge remediation effort. I was good at fixing things. So they put me in this role. But I didn't know anything about data. And I was running a global data organization. So I try to keep that lesson with me, knowing that you've got business leaders that are leveraging data to make very important decisions. And they really probably don't know the vast reasons that you should actually have this asset highly governed. So I think just breaking it down in terms of great data will result in great decisions, will result in maximum output for what you're trying to do, drive revenue, value creation. It also helps us talk to the regulators, which we can touch on. But I generally like to approach it that way. And then lastly, what I would close before I maybe let Liz chime in is say the same thing over and over and over. You almost want to sound like a broken record, because influencing an organization to change is going to take repetition where, you know, you almost have to wear people down with the facts and with empathy, and eventually they'll get on board, you know, and it's, there's an art to that as well.
Yeah. And I want to agree with that. And I think Jay speaks really well of the end of what I call the pipeline. And we joke about it in various conversations about calling it a data conveyor belt, where you're moving it from a source system and an operational environment and then being used in decision-making and potentially analytics and stuff like that. You know, it's often easy to get those at the end of that value stream on board with governance, but then how do you get them at the front end, the creators, the originators of it? And that empathy is also really important there, because they're often overburdened with a variety of other responsibilities and stuff. And so to Jay's point, that leading with that empathy, that saying it multiple times, you know, trying to avoid the catastrophic, you know, are unique challenges that we have to come in. And sometimes you have to kind of change the narrative, change the dialogue. Yes, you're saying it 8 and 10 times, but you're maybe saying it just a little differently because one of those times is going to resonate. You know, I look at a previous institution where I was working in data, and we were on the, you know, more of the operational front end side. And it's like you make one mistake and the catastrophic, you know, it's like the window cracking and you see it spider webbing out, that catastrophic impact that it can have. And if you're in that operation space, and if it is a retail environment, perhaps that could mean tens of thousands of angry phone calls that nobody wants to hear. And to Jay's earlier point, everything relates back to data. And so help to guide and shepherd through that, you know, reliance on and expectation of how to craft it to being clean, correct, solid data. And I think that that's part of it. That's one of the biggest things around governance is oftentimes it's getting people to see that value and being willing to invest in it, because it cannot be a side of desk type activity, which is where often it starts.
And I think kind of on what you just said there, there is a return on investment. There is a diminishing return on getting the, you know, okay, we need this thing to be able to make a real-time pop-up recommendation. Okay, to get to 100% accuracy on exactly what happened with their click stream, it's going to cost us $50 million versus to get to 99.9% accuracy, it's going to cost us $500,000. So like, okay, the value differential, I think that's really important. And I really like, Jay, you talked about wearing them down with empathy, which is kind of a lot of what I do, even in the community and stuff. So, and I started to, Jay, when you talked about the governance as a service, I think where everybody in governance wants to go, maybe, you know, I don't want to speak for people, but the more conversations I have is that where you can focus on that value add instead of the, you know, where people aren't looking at you as the mandate or that the person that's going to be blessing their decisions in the wrong ways, right? It's that you want to enable them to add that value, you want to enable them to work together. And that if you are making it where you know, you're a major hurdle instead of a major helper, that's not a fun place to be. Sometimes it's a necessary place to be, but how can we get towards that helper angle, I think is a really difficult question. So I'm happy to give space to react to that, but I would also really love to dig into, Liz, what you talked about of getting that buy-in upstream. I think we see that the data consumers are bought in, that they want governance to happen so they have high quality data. But how do we continue to push that upstream, and how do we get it so people aren't trying to push things through where you have to kind of come in with the stick or the stop sign or things like that? How do you get them to involve you in the process where you can add the most value?
So Scott, I'll lead out if you don't mind, and Liz, you can cover the tail end of the two-pronged questions. And as you have mentioned in the past about the prisoner's dilemma, I think you have to be cognizant of that. And so if you can't wow them on you're going to create revenue, or you get to the point where actually there's the margins, you know, it's just not working anymore for investment. Another approach, and this is one that I feel as though in the latter years of my data journey, I've gotten much better than the beginning part. Maybe that was just a maturation of me as an executive as well. But I like to view what we do for the firm. I often say this, and Liz knows, and my team knows this as well. These guys and gals have outsourced data to us. And if you think of it like that, I am your outsourced service provider. And then you take it a step further and you say, and I'll do the real ugly stuff that you don't want to do. And so if you work in a highly regulated industry, and you're getting called in front of the regulator to talk about data governance, data remediation, data controls, and you're running a big business, it sure feels good if you can count on an accountable executive to do that on your behalf and have to deal with all the documentation and actually stand in front of the regulators and say, this is how we do things. Or if it's not necessarily highly regulated, but if your board is interested in your data controls, which the way that I view it is, you're either regulated or you're not. But when it comes to data, you have to act like you're regulated, because if you don't, you're going to have a breach and then Congress is going to figure out a way to regulate you. So you can talk about all sorts of different streams in financial services and corporate America in general about the dichotomy between regulation, highly regulated sectors and not so highly regulated sectors. But data crosses the chasm that we all have to act it if we're not actually it. So if you start to provide value by providing decks and plans and execution, most importantly, and a face to those really complicated matters, then I think all of the really fun stuff builds from that. And I've seen that transformation at firms where you come in and you're new and you say, I'm here to do X, Y, and Z with respect to data. And then your colleagues are looking at you like, who are you? Why are you here? I have a big organization to run. And then you start providing that value where a board update comes up and you get tagged in to represent them or the regulators, as I've mentioned. And then you see the shift where it's like, hey, Jay, can you come to this? Hey, Jay, I actually need help on tooling. Can you help me with tooling? I've seen that evolution. And to me, that my perspective is if you can start to provide that value as being the outsourced data service provider, all sorts of fun stuff will flow from there because you have credibility. Now, obviously, in closing on my points, you have to execute. If you're getting in front of an authoritative source, a regulator, a board, executive committee of your firm, individual leader in a business, you really have to show well. So make sure you're on your A game, make sure that you're crisp and that you're fully representing the data journey, and all sorts of fun stuff will flow from there with that credibility.
Before I go to my point, I want to add on to this. I've had the fortune of working for Jay for about half of his data career now. One of the things that he taught me is sometimes, and I said this a little bit earlier, sometimes you have to flip the narrative. So, yes, we are not a revenue stream, but one thing that we are, when done right, is a cost avoidance. And I think that that's another really important kind of thing to point out. And especially in a highly regulated environment, as Jay pointed out, if we're not doing it right, what is the implication of that? And what can that cost you as a firm? Can, in a variety of ways, either through fees and fines or just, poor product that has to be mitigated. So, correct in that we may not be a revenue stream for an organization, but we certainly can be that line of defense, that protection to help. And that can be a way that we really help to add that value as we execute. To Jay's point, we must execute. We must deliver on it and everything. And then going back to your question earlier about, how do we bring that earlier in the stream? And I think that, again, it going back to the cost avoidance as well. It's the continual opportunity of sharing and showing how we can help to improve the business. And again, that improvement will resonate to the customers. It'll resonate, but it will always be indirect. But that the better the quality of the data, the better the cost avoidance, the better this, the easier other things start to be done. So, we've had instances where, we've wanted to implement something or looked at, and when I say we, I mean in my career and in my history, not necessarily in the most recent times, but, wanting to ensure that we are delivering to a customer in a manner that is viable to them and makes their lives easier through the data can be very helpful. Or not just helpful, it's necessary. Bad data may result in, calling a customer at the wrong time of the day, and then you're getting fined because of, calling outside of normal hours, things like that. It seems basic, it seems obvious, but again, without that governance providing those guardrails, you can misstep.
So one thing when you are being that kind of service provider, or especially if you were taking things on, is that you can become a bottleneck. So how do you think about that, staying out of being that bottleneck? When people think about service provider versus somebody who's empowering them, it can be difficult. It can also be something where you have to step in to be that service provider so that there is a centralized focus on doing it right before you can flip it back to them and start to push more and more back to them, or Jay, as you talked about, kind of be involved in the process earlier and earlier, so they're not coming to you at the 12th hour and saying, you know, oh, we have to deploy this tomorrow. Can you bless us? Can you sign off on this? So, like, how have you found that works on preventing being that bottleneck? And that how are you getting involved early enough, but that you aren't the one that, I talked to somebody recently who said, don't be doing their jobs for them, empower them. And so how do you stay out of the things that you should, but that you do step in when you can be the one where not everybody should have to understand GDPR or, you know, the very fine grain issues with regulation and things like that? Like, would love to hear kind of what you've learned from doing that.
So it's funny because when you said bottleneck, I had a visceral reaction, like, how dare you? We are never bottlenecks in data. What we do is the high priest of business, which is kind of true. But I think acknowledging that you could be a bottleneck, asking your consumers to source data from the right place, when the right place might not be defined, the right place might be very hard to find, you're going to be a bottleneck. And so I think acknowledging that first and foremost is very, very important. And then solutioning. It comes down to solutioning, being flexible. I mean, Liz and I used to joke about our office in a prior firm that we were Switzerland. We never really took a stand. We just saw everyone's view and tried to be the middle ground. But I gained a lot of notoriety as a chief data officer when I didn't know data that well, when I was still on my data journey, by just being a fixer. And so taking bottlenecks out of the process. And obviously you can't always do that, but you can when you say, okay, here's how you should do it. Here's how you should source the data, for example. But obviously I can't stop you because you have to do something very quickly. You need to get this product out. You need to file a report for the executive committee, the regulators, whatever it might be. And let's acknowledge that you're not going to do it perfectly. And let's go on the record, let's document that, and let's give an exception, a waiver, and then let's have a process to manage that. There has to be an end game. Like, those bottlenecks are there for a reason. And so if grade is where you want to be, I think you have to take those bottlenecks out, Scott. I think you have to be very flexible on the timing. As long as we can all agree on the end game. And by the way, I think the way the data practitioners can protect themselves and those that actually own the data is being fully transparent. If you want to remove this bottleneck, and in a scenario like you want to source data from an imperfect source, but you're comfortable with that risk, let's acknowledge it. Let's go on the record with it. Let's put a plan around it. Let's put a plan to remediate the risk. And then everybody knows what's going on. Everyone is informed. And if you have an end time when you're going to fix it, and it could be years, then you really could look an authoritative source in the eyes, a regulator, an auditor, and say, yes, we acknowledge the risk, we accept the risk, the business accepts the risk. We have a process to continuously monitor the waiver process. We're going to revisit it on a quarterly, annually basis. And we've got an end game. And here's what the end game looks like. I think if you can provide those types of long-term solutions, it acknowledges the bottlenecks, but it also provides opportunities to eliminate them, at least on a temporary basis.
I want to add to that. You know, we talked earlier on, and we continue to bring it up, the leading with empathy is important here too. And to Jay's point, using that empathy, listening to their concerns, and then phasing in the solutions. Nothing is going to be fixed. Well, we cannot expect that everything can be fixed overnight. And incremental improvements and having that roadmap and driving to that roadmap will help to provide that insight that we are a partner in that journey for them. And it might be that the first time that we're talking is more of a retrospective. And then it's, you know, phasing in back to a partner along the journey. And then it's we're an intake milestone toll gate type behavior that you're incrementally improving the process, incrementally improving the governance, but with a specific targeted roadmap. And I think that helps to provide that buy-in, that empathy of knowing that we're acknowledging, we're listening to those that we are working to help deliver the governance within, that service-oriented model of, you know, you're coming to us with a problem, how can we fix it? Now, retrospectively, now how do we, lessons learned, how do we change that in the future? I think that that empathy is, it's something that we can do a lot more in faster by doing that. I will admit that earlier in my career, I was technology, black and white. You can just, it's a hard and fast rule. You just do. But we really need to listen to our, I don't want to say constituents because this isn't a political thing, but, you know, we need to listen to our peers, our partners on this, who are on this journey with us. And that in some instances, we're bringing them along on the journey, whether they like it or not.
I use the word constituents a lot when I think about the community, because it's, you know, it is used in political terms, but that's what I think you have to think about, is that these people are voting for you in certain ways. Are they trying to get around you, or are they trying to work with you? And a lot of what you talked about, you kind of, Liz, you wrapped up both you and Jay's point, I think, a lot was when you said it's not black and white. I think so much of what you're saying is listening to the people and say, what are you trying to accomplish? Not here is the framework to do this, but like, what are you trying to accomplish? Okay, the way we typically do that is that you do A, B, C, and D, but we understand in this case that doing B and C would unnecessarily delay us. But not doing B and C right now, or doing kind of a, you know, not a half-assed job, maybe a three-quarter-assed job or whatever, that we're going to get it to a place that's good enough now, but we are set being explicit that this is not where it needs to be and we're going to get there. I think that's really important. I'm finding the people who are having success in these, in data mesh journeys in general and data journeys overall, are the ones who get explicit, who have that empathy in what are you trying to accomplish? What are we trying to do here and why? Right? Okay, it's kind of like you're doing data mesh, but why? You know, like, what's the actual point of this? There has to be a point. And I think that being explicit and having those empathy conversations. And again, Jay, I loved the phrasing of wear them down with empathy, because it really is. It's such a funny, like, turn of phrase on it. But I think it's so useful to think about, how do we have these conversations? Without calling any colleagues out, whether past or present, can you give some examples about, like, where it's been a little bit tough to, people are used to kind of old school governance, are used to trying to maneuver around you? Like, you're doing a very new school type of governance. You're taking a big kind of leap, and it's one that makes sense. And Jay, I think you're especially pushing in this direction because you've come from outside of the data world. You're not as tied to this is the way we've always done data. Right. So I think Liz, you're the exception from within the data space of the people who are like, I'm comfortable going down this totally new road. But like, what has been the things where people have pushed back, and how have you, like, specifically, you know, some specific examples for people that are having difficulty with this would be, I think, really helpful for the audience.
Yeah, I was thinking about old school data governance, and I'm still waiting for the current school to sort of get data governance, which is, I think, part of data governance as a service, right? And that credibility. But I double click quickly on what you said, Scott. I really appreciate it. What are you trying to accomplish and why? Like, that's a fantastic question to ask, because then we can solve it together. If I know it, like, you can go full Jerry Maguire at that point. Help me help you. Like, what can I do to help you? But you're never going to be able to provide that service, that help, particularly to data, of course, if you don't know where they're going. And much more adversely would be, And perhaps this is why the average tenure of a chief data officer is 2.6 years. You know, too often a very, very smart chief data officer will go to a new firm and they'll know what worked for them, or maybe they won't know it didn't work. Maybe that's why they're at the new firm. And they'll come up with a fantastic plan. And it's their plan. And it's really hard to get your plan implemented. It's a hell of a lot easier to get our plan implemented. And so, like, your point about what are you trying to accomplish and why, once you start to double click on that, you can insert yourself to be part of that equation. And so, I mean, that's one way of approaching it. I also just think there's going to be situations you're not going to win. I can recall, without naming names, certain business executives in a prior life, they just didn't care about data. And I would present what I thought was the most eloquent response. I had credibility. And at the end of the day, they didn't care. They weren't sending any senior people to our data management council, and they outsourced it to someone who was at a much more junior level and couldn't drive impact and change. We lost that battle. We were never going to win it. Liz probably knows precisely which line of business I'm talking about as a prior life. And so sometimes you just have, in those scenarios, you go like, well, who's the best option? If I'm not going to win with the president of the business, who's the best option that I can influence to help? And really all we're doing is helping them, and they don't even know it because they don't want to hear it. So in those losing situations, just find the best option. Acknowledge when you're going to be in those situations. But, you know, that's probably going to be a minority of your time spent on the data governance journey. I think in most cases, it goes back to finding a way to help them. And then you'll start to get the old school data governance. I guess probably the old school data governance is people that didn't care about it. And so really the new school is getting more people to get fired up about it. And that comes down to storytelling and making correlations. When you can correlate GDPR, MiFID II, CCPA, or just really good data analytics into value creation, and oh sure, that's great. Those are buzzwords. Like, what does all that mean? But we can actually correlate that into a journey and actionable for an investment and output that is provable. That's when you can really start to change the old school data governance folks. In my view, the people that don't really care about data. That's how you start doing it. And it's very important to have quick wins. Quick wins, put points on the board, and show those points.
Liz, did you want to?
No, I totally agree. I think the quick wins are really the important part. You know, in making sure that those are seen and valued, so that you keep adding on and that incremental improvement.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's you talked about that incremental, and I think that's really important. And I think especially there are some organizations where they're really bought in that we've got to do data right. And so I think you have to balance the quick wins with the long term, what's the really big value add. But big bang approaches don't work, right? Like, I think that's the whole point of Data Mesh, is like incrementally figuring out where is the value and moving towards it, instead of saying, we're going to implement this data warehouse, this enterprise data warehouse, and it's going to be the best thing. And we're going to take 6 months to figure out how to do it. And then, you know, it's already kind of becoming out of date because the real world that you're trying to reflect has changed by the time it's actually even before it's in production. The real world has already changed. So, you know, we have to figure out new ways of doing this. So I know we're coming up on time here. So is there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to, or is there any way that you'd kind of like to wrap up the conversation here?
Scott, I'll paraphrase you. I think in a couple podcasts ago, you said not enough people talk about this. I think it was in your Prisoner's Dilemma podcast. We got to keep talking about it. So I love that you're providing that. And then the other thing I would say is, we haven't touched on this, but you really need great people to you need that empathy. Not everyone possesses great empathy. And so building an amazing team is going to help that journey. And I feel really proud of the team I've established. Liz is part of it. She's got a bunch of great colleagues as well. And finding a way to get the organization to allow you to organize and galvanize an amazing team is so important. It's the difference between a great organization and a good organization, or even less than good. So I would close on that. That's critical.
And I would just, I mean, echoing it is, it feels like not enough, but yeah, the empathy, the balance, knowing that they're all of our partners on their journey, and they would argue that they have another part of their job that's more important, and that's where we're providing that value and taking it off their plates in a way that is still giving them that visibility, that accountability to it, but making their lives easier when it comes to data in an empathetic manner is so key to all of this. And it provides that flexibility to continuously improve.
Okay. Well, I totally agree with a lot of that. I'm very much about, that's why I even got interested in data mesh, is that it's so high empathy. So if people want to follow up with you, what would you like them following up? Where would you like them doing it? LinkedIn or Twitter, or kind of what's the best way, and what would you like them actually reaching out about?
For me, I haven't used my Twitter account in a really long time, so I'm probably almost embarrassed to even admit I still have it. So definitely LinkedIn, definitely message me. I'm happy to continue dialoguing on this. It's definitely something I'm very passionate about. And I look forward to continuing in those conversations.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm LinkedIn, and I really enjoy talking about data and sharing best practices and solutioning. So I'm always happy to talk about that. And we are a very incredible institution, and we are hiring a lot. And so career journeys are very important. And I think LinkedIn's a fantastic mechanism to maximize that. So LinkedIn's the way to go. Happy to chat with our friends in the data space.
And I'll drop the careers page link in the show notes as well. So if people are interested, they can look at that as well. So again, Liz, Jay, this has been so great. Thank you so much for spending the time, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks for having us, Scott. Be well.
Thanks, Scott.
I'd again like to thank my guests today, Jay Como and Liz Calloway from Silicon Valley Bank. Jay is the head of finance data, and Liz is the director of finance data products. If you'd like to get in touch with them, you can find their links to their LinkedIn in the show notes as per usual. Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening to another great guest on the Data Mesh Learning Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors, especially DataStax, who actually pays for me full time to help out the Data Mesh community. If you're looking for a scalable, extremely cost-efficient, multi-data center, multi-cloud database offering, and or an easy-to-scale data streaming offering, check DataStax out. There's a link in the show notes. If you want to get in touch with me, there's links in the show notes to go ahead and reach out. I would love to hear more about what you're doing with Data Mesh and how I can be helpful. So please do reach out and let me know, as well as if you'd like to be a guest. Check out the show notes for more information. Thanks so much.